Blog Talk Radio.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet, sharing our living, our dying, our birth, and we won't stand by watching her die.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak with your host, Beth Miller. All points of view must be brought to light if we're to reach the wisest solutions to challenges we face. Guests on Your Turn to Speak have unusual insights to bring to the collective conversation. They have been invited because of the positive impact of their loving presence on Earth. Though their ideas may be hidden by the glare of the mainstream focus, their perspectives are guaranteed to inspire and enrich us all. And now, here's your host, Beth Miller.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak. I'm your host, Beth Miller. As we begin this evening's show, I'd like to just take a moment to offer my heartfelt thanks to the recording artist, Molly Scott, for her beautiful song, We Are All One Planet, which so beautifully sets the tone for our conversation this evening. You can listen to the song in its entirety by visiting Molly's website at mollyscott.com. And before introducing my special guest this evening, I'd like to give you a heads up about upcoming programs. On Earth Day, April 22nd, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Ursula Rossum will discuss green politics and talk about her run for mayor of Syracuse on the Green Party ticket at Syracuse, New York. And on April 29th, again at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Dennis Cole, a transpersonal astrologer, lecturer, and author, will speak about life focus and self-empowerment. And now, it is my great delight to introduce Janet Ridgway, our guest this evening, who has a rare and precious gift. Janet is an animal communicator whose goal is to help animals and their people understand each other better. Our animals can be like mirrors for us, and they can literally absorb our emotional and physical issues. They are filled with unconditional love and serve so many purposes in our lives that many of us say that we value our animals even beyond many of our human relationships. Janet's goals as an animal communicator are to give us hope, leave us with tools to help affect positive changes in our relationships with our animals, and to give us a deeper understanding of our mutual purpose for being together. Welcome, Janet. It's your turn to speak.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, it is my privilege, our privilege. Well, before we actually get into the nuts and bolts of what you do, I was wondering if you would share a little bit about your background, your childhood, your spiritual path. What was some of the factors in your early life that might have led you to the person you are today and the work that you do today?
Well, that's a great question. I guess I was one of those people who was born with more of this connection to animals than the average person, although I will say that it is a skill that everybody can learn, and I do feel like most people actually have what I have. They just may not have it quite as loudly in their ear as I do.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I listened to animals all the time, and I really thought that everybody had what I had. I thought people were just more dismissive of animals, just like the way they were sort of dismissive of children, you know, when I'd go to say something and people would, you know, kind of pat you on the head like, oh, that's cute. And I sort of thought it was the same way with animals, that people could really understand them, but for whatever reason, they just kind of ignored what was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I watched a lot of Disney films, like I'm sure most people did, and all the animals in there talked. And so I just didn't really think it was anything unusual. I did have a few events that happened when I was young that made me start to realize that maybe not everybody had what I had. I have a squirrel that I was probably in first grade. He lived in the tree outside of my house, and he would walk me to school. And I had a really busy road. Yeah, he walked me to school. There was a really busy road that was outside, and I'd get to the corner, and he'd stop, and I'd cross, and that was sort of it. And then when I'd come back from school, he'd be waiting for me. And I was always talking about my squirrel that walked me to school. And one day I was outside playing, and my mom was outside, and my neighbor was out there too. And she's one of those ladies who really, you know, manicured her lawn, so she was kind of outside 24 hours a day. And my squirrel came down and was looking at me, and I said, "Oh, there's my squirrel." And I heard my mom say to the neighbor, well, she thinks she has this squirrel that walks her to school. And my neighbor said, "Oh, yeah, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. He walks her to the corner, and he comes back." And that was the first moment where I realized my mom didn't believe me, or that it was, you know, something that somebody found unusual. And I remember thinking, huh, well, that's strange. Why wouldn't she believe me that this squirrel walked me to school? It just seemed very, you know, normal to me. So I had a lot of experiences like that as a child that apparently weren't too normal.
Yeah.
Whatever normal is, that's what's been normal for me my whole life. So
wow.
That's kind of one of my earliest memories. And then we got a dog when I was 7, and I could understand what he said, and I interacted with him in ways that other people in my family couldn't. And you know, luckily for me, they just sort of shrugged their shoulders and said, "She's got something unusual. We don't really know what it is." And luckily, they didn't really negate it, but they also didn't really address it directly, because I think they just didn't really know what to do. So that's sort of my early childhood memory of, you know, the earliest time I can really remember having a relationship with an animal.
Wow. Does that extend to other beings like birds or other, like, reptiles as well, or is it
mostly? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mixed?
Yeah, everything. Yeah, wow. Anything and everything. I mean, I walk out in the woods a lot with my dog, and I just encountered, I actually asked for a sign about something, and I asked to see an owl, because I really haven't seen an owl in quite a while, and the woods near where I live have owls in them. And sure enough, I was walking with her, and I had my headphones on, and I heard stop, and so I stopped, and I turned off whatever I was listening to and kind of looked around and didn't see anything, and suddenly I felt like I was supposed to look up, and I looked up, and straight above me in this tree was, I mean, he must have been about 2 feet high, 2 feet tall. I mean, he was this huge great horned owl looking right down at me, and I was really excited to see him. I stood there for about an hour and talked to him, and he's very interesting. So, yeah, I can talk to any of them. Usually it's whether or not they talk to me. That's the important part.
Right. Could I ask what the owl said to you?
Yeah, you can. I guess he didn't swear me to secrecy or anything. He just basically, I was asking him, I thanked him for coming, first of all, because I was asking for a sign that was something really personal to me, and so that part was good. And he said he was there on purpose for me, and so that part was really moving to me. I was really happy about that. And then we just kind of got into the basics of, I asked him if, you know, the winter was as horrible for him as it was for everybody else, and what he had been eating, and if he had a family, and if that was the tree he lived in, things like that. And you know, your run-of-the-mill conversation. I know it sounds kind of, it's always funny. People always laugh when I say things like this, but it was a run-of-the-mill conversation that you'd have with any owl, I guess. Asking him what he does, what he eats, where he goes.
I just can't imagine how wonderful that must feel like, you know, to be able to actually, in that sense, communicate with another living being who's so very different from us, but yet all part of the same planet, you know, and part of the same web of life. Amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's definitely, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, people think it's really fabulous, but then, you know, try walking around being me and telling people what you do for a living. So, you know, some people get very excited by it and say, oh, I want you to talk to my animals, and other people look at me like I'm a flake or like I'm crazy or something, and that's fine. I've kind of got over that a long time ago. For the most part, I just don't interact when they have doubts and things like that. I just kind of let them have them. And I mean, there's times that I doubt it, too. I mean, there's definitely days where I say, are these animals really talking to me, or am I just making this up in my head? And I ask that question a lot less frequently now than I did for a while, because really what did it for me is the fact that all these pieces of information would come through. I'd convey them to the people I was talking to, you know, whoever their pets were, and they knew what I was talking about. And half the time, I didn't know what I was talking about. It was just whatever the pets were saying would come out of my mouth, and they'd be talking about people and things and situations that I didn't know anything about. So I've gotten used to it at this point, but there's definitely moments where I, you know, check in with myself and say, okay, so this is still happening, right? This isn't just me making it up in my head. And that's why I think a lot of people have it, but they think they're making it up. A lot of people pick up things from their pets and from other people and even from objects or, you know, things in nature. And people think they're making it up, and they don't always trust it because we're not really taught to trust our intuition.
That's true. We are so entrenched in the empirical way of looking at things or learning about things, it's sometimes hard to believe ourselves when our intuition says, through our own experiential reality, this is the truth. But, you know, we all, you know, often think, well, how can we prove it? You know, have there been any double-blind studies? You know,
I've given up trying to prove it. That's the thing. I mean, it's funny because I will hear about studies as time goes on. You know, when quantum physics started coming on the forefront, and a lot of people were talking about the studies that people were doing to sort of prove the way that we think creates reality and all of that, there's a woman, her name is Lynn McTaggart, and she's got some books that are really interesting that kind of blend spirituality and science, and she had a section in there about animal communication and, you know, psychics and things like that and how the quantum field really explains a lot of that, which I thought was interesting, but at the same time I said, okay, well, that's for somebody who needs that. You know, I kind of gave up thinking about why it was happening a long time ago, because then I really would go crazy if I spent all my time trying to figure out why and how this is happening to me. I just,
that's right.
It's,
in a way, you can kind of lose some of the magic of it by overanalyzing it. In fact, maybe even, you know, like this is what I think happens sometimes when people have a passion for something, and then they go and take academic course after academic course, and then suddenly their original passion for the, you know, the subject is lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like asking someone to explain love, how you love somebody or why you love somebody, and prove it.
Right.
Well, how are you going to do that? You know what you know, you feel what you feel. There's
exactly.
No empirical data for it. It's just what it is. And so, however, if people want to study this, or if they, you know, come up with some way to figure out how or why I do what I do, I'd be very interested in that. Don't get me wrong, I would love it if there was some hard science about it, but I don't know how close we are to that at this point to getting any of that information.
Right. If I remember correctly, you mentioned Lynn McTaggart. Isn't she the one that did a lot of work with the indigenous people of the Amazon area?
Ooh, that's a good question. That I don't know. I know she's written more than one book. The one that I read was she told a story in it about her dog, and I'm paraphrasing. I may be getting the story a little bit, not exactly correct here, but basically some woman insulted her dog while she was walking the dog, and I think he was, she'd had him for maybe 9 years or something. He was an older dog, and he lifted his leg and peed all over the woman. And, of course, I'd never done anything like that before. And she was like, okay, well, I guess my animal does understand what people are saying. And I think she had been in that mode of inquiry at that time, that was sort of one of the things that she was putting out into the quantum field at the time. You know, what's the answer to this question? And her dog kind of answered it by peeing on this person's leg, which I found hysterical because that kind of, I hear stories about that kind of stuff all the time. So, and I say that to people a lot. They'll make comments in front of their animals, and I'll say, you know, they're right there. They can hear you. And then they look dumbfounded as if somebody told them, you know, something they'd never heard before. I'm like, they understand you. They're standing right in front of you. So, you know, people insult their cats and say they're fat, and usually the cats come back with, well, you could lose a little weight too. You're not perfect. So they just can't hear what they're saying back. So, you know, right. Don't be rude to your animals. They understand what you're saying.
Absolutely. Would you like to take a call here? Shall we try
for
a caller? All right, hold on
just
a moment.
Why not?
Hello, can I have your name, please?
This is David. I've been passed by the show. You pressed the wrong button, and that's okay. Let's see if I can come up with a question. I have got a situation. A year ago, I broke my ankle, and I was not able to adequately clean my litter boxes. And the cat
I can already hear where this story is going.
Yeah, the cat peeing all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was able to deal with the box every day, they continued to do that. So I'm not sure what to do about the situation.
So it's still going on now?
It is, yes.
Okay, and how long ago was, what did you break, your ankle, you said?
Yeah, I broke it a year and a half ago, and I was out of commission for approximately 2 months. And during that time, the boxes were not kept up quite to standard, if you will, and that's when the peeing started.
What are your cats' names?
Well, there are four.
Mm-hmm.
There is Samantha, who is not an issue. Sunset Angel is the main problem. And there is Robbie, and there is Precious.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robbie just jumped out at me as being one of the head pissers involved here.
He is.
Did you, let me ask, and this might sound silly, but did you apologize to them?
No, I didn't.
That's the sense I'm getting, is that even though you had this, you know, injury and they understood what was going on and you fixed the problem, they're still a little bit pissed off, literally, that you didn't apologize to them.
Ah, okay. So do I
it's
need to have
like
an individual?
It's kind of like having a wife. She's still, when you do something, she's still thinking about it 2 years later, going, you know, he never apologized for that. That's the sense that I'm getting. Also, though, what can happen is when they start to pee on things, you know, the smell stays.
Yeah.
And even with a lot of the modern products that they have, I find that most of them don't work. For me,
okay.
The only thing that's ever really worked is white vinegar, you know, just like your grandmother used to use. Just get a big gallon of white vinegar and find the places where they have been peeing and really clean them thoroughly. It'll smell like white vinegar pretty badly for a couple of days, but that will usually take the scent out of there and make them stop marking there.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Should I have individual talk?
Yeah. Well, you can apologize as a group, but you also, I think, want to talk to Robbie directly and tell him, because now it's become kind of a game to him. He just thinks it's funny, and he knows it irritates you. So there's something going on deeper with the relationship with Robbie and the other cats and with you as well. So that might be something that, you know, if he wanted an appointment later, I could find out what his problem is. But it's become a game for him, which,
okay.
you know, not so much of a game for us. It's no fun. I see
no.
many, many cats lose their homes and many of them lose their lives for peeing inappropriately in a house. I mean, people will finally just give up and euthanize their cats
yeah.
because they're destroying
oh,
their house. So
I couldn't do that, yeah.
Right, right. I don't think it's the majority of people, but some people end up doing that, and it's, you know, let him know that it's serious and that he really has to stop.
I will do that. And, Beth, I don't know if you got my message, but when
yeah.
the show is over, click the end episode button.
Yes.
And then it will ask you if that's truly what you want to do, and then you click it again, and that
okay.
will preserve the episode for you.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. Thank
All
you
right.
for taking the call.
You're welcome. No problem.
Okay.
Well, would you like to take the second call?
Sure.
All right, let's try it again here. And thank you, by the way, for your patience and as I learn the producing end of the show here. One moment. Hello, can I help you? Hello? Hello? I guess we lost that one.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Can
yeah,
I hear
I wasn't
name?
Unmuted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Can I help you? What would be your question for Janet?
Okay, mine is about a cat. I live in the Chicago area, so we had a brutal winter. He showed up in the fall. You know, of course, I can't get near him. Very clean looking. Then it was, you know, 17 below, 14 below. He was on my front steps. I think this was January. He looked like he was barely hanging on. Then a day or so later, he was limping on three legs. So a rescue gave me a trap. I trapped him. The rescue took him to the vet. His leg was all swollen. So he's been in the house ever since. And he's very shy under the bed. He has, like, poked his head out now that it's been warmer outside. And do you get where he came from? Is he wild? Not wild. He looks young. He looks maybe a little over a year, if that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what did you end up naming him?
I just call him Kitty Mau Mau.
Okay, the sense that I'm getting from him is that he is a feral cat, and he was with a few other cats, but he got separated from them. I do think that I don't know what they found in terms of his injury, if they found any puncture marks on him, but I do feel like
no,
he got
it was
kind
swollen
of pen-
like
eaten
a,
up.
Like a golf ball, but then I gave him painkillers in his food and an anti-inflammatory, and it seems to
mm-hmm.
be fine, but the vet said it looked like it was a possible injury of an old injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it feels like is he got the jump, you know, like another animal jumped on him and got his leg, and so that was, you know, part of what was going on there was, I don't know if they found puncture wounds or anything
no.
like that, but it feels more like, you know, have you ever seen another cat attack another cat, and they kind of grab their butt from behind and,
right.
you know, bite down or grab on them? That's kind of what I feel like, that he either got hurt by the cat itself or, you know, trying to flee the situation, you know, did something to his leg in the process. I don't have the feeling from him that, I mean, I feel like he likes you and he's grateful, but I don't have the feeling from him that he would like to necessarily stay living in the house, that you might be able at this point to start letting him out and, you know, see how he does. You could, you know, still put out food and feed him a little bit and see what happens, but I don't feel like he belonged to anybody per se. Someone else may have been feeding him as well, but I think with him, you may end up not being able to tame him. If you don't mind having a cat in your house that's more feral that you can't really, you know, pick up and cuddle and love, then I don't see any reason why he couldn't be an indoor-outdoor cat for you. But at this point, I think he's well enough to go out, if that's your preference.
Yeah, the vet kind of recommended not to let him out ever again because she thought his leg could easily be re-injured.
Mm. And what do you feel about it? Do you want to keep him, or...?
Well, you know, now that it's like the winter's over and spring, except for, you know, today and yesterday, he has been, like, pulling his, you know, his head out from under the bed, and he's rolling around and kind of engaging with me now that it's
mm-hmm.
warm.
Yeah, for the first time, though, since he's been in the house, pretty much?
Well, I had him in a big cage, and I used to scratch his neck, but then he couldn't stay in the cage forever. You know,
right.
That was,
oh, so he's been in
the
cage for months. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
he was in
the
cage for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Janet,
I think it's up to you, because the feeling I get is that he would like to be indoor-outdoor, so that's kind of up to you to decide, but that's his preference. So he may try to escape at some point if you don't let him out anyway.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank
but he's a happy guy, and he's really grateful.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank Bye-bye. You. Bye.
Thank you, Janet, for answering these questions
sure.
here. Just as I happen to, you know, be kind of perusing through your website, and I noticed that you do workshops.
I do.
And I wondered if you could tell the listeners about some of the workshops that you conduct and how they could, you know, have a chance to contact you if they were interested in signing up for any. Are your workshops all done on site, or can they be done via the web? Or
I do workshops a few different ways. When I first started, I used to do them out of my house, and then frankly, I just got sick of cleaning my house. I didn't want to do it here anymore, and then some of the classes got big enough that I really couldn't fit people here. So, you know, I do it a variety of ways. Sometimes people will have a center, you know, massage place or whatever, any place of business, and they will hold it in their own space. You know, oftentimes it's animal people, obviously, someone who owns an agility center or, you know, something like that. But I have been mostly moving into doing teleclasses. For the last couple years, I did a lot of teleclasses. You probably don't see too many on my website right now because I'm in the process of having someone help me change some things over, and I'm going to start offering more classes again in the spring. But the most popular one I do is an animal communication class. I just went to Long Island and taught a class there, and I travel to Florida pretty regularly to teach and do you know, individual appointments there. But I travel pretty much anywhere as long as there's enough people to take the class, you know, to make it worth my time to go there. So, yeah, I do get hired out for that. I also teach spiritual development classes. A lot of it is – go ahead.
That was very much of interest to me, also your spiritual development classes, and that associated with energy healing. One of the things that I kind of took my eye was some reference to learning how not to be a sponge of other people's negative energies.
I'm still working on that myself. people who are empathic, which I didn't really know what that was growing up. I realized as an adult when I started learning about it, I went, oh, that is me. That's completely me. I was sick a lot when I was young because I was taking on everybody's stuff all the time. Someone would come over and say they had a horrible headache, and they'd talk to me for a little while, and they'd leave and feel better, and then I'd have the headache. And it took me a long time to really realize that was what was happening. especially if it's someone that I love or that I'm close to or that I feel an emotional bond with. There's times that I just take on all their stuff, and I don't mean to. It's just, it's part of, like I said, the gift and the curse of what I do. It's what makes me good at what I do, you know, because I can pick up an animal's pain or their injury, or I can say, ooh, I'll ask the dog, you know, what's going on with your body, and I'll suddenly feel, shooting pain in my knee, and say, okay, sharp pain in the knee. And it doesn't stay with me. Usually it's just long enough to be transmitted to me so that I can tell their person what's happening. With animals, it seems like it's a little easier to control. With people, not so much. So yeah. I have to be really diligent about protecting myself energetically, and it's something I have to do pretty much every day. So part of the reason I teach the classes is because I think there's more people who are empathic than realize that they are, and it actually is a reminder to me when I teach the classes of, you know, oh, wow, I really have to do this every day. I mean, it's sort of like taking a shower or brushing your teeth. For me, it needs to be that regimented. Otherwise, you know, I end up with crazy illnesses, and I end up with, you know, feeling badly, or, you know, crying, and I don't know why I'm crying. It's somebody else's emotion I'm picking up on, and things like that. And so there are some people I know who have thought they've maybe had a mental imbalance of some kind, and then I say, no, you're just picking up everybody else's stuff. And as soon as they learn how to control it, then that stops happening to them. So it's really, for a lot of people, quite a relief to learn that that's what it is and how to handle that.
Yeah, I know. Even just aside from getting ill from picking up on other people's negativities, there's also the consequence of fatigue sometimes, just being tired a lot from interacting with people, even people who don't really intend to be negative, but there's that energy zapping kind of thing. And I noticed on your website you do work a little bit with essential oils.
Yes.
I don't know if you use the oils in conjunction with possibly helping with that kind of protective.
Yeah, I use everything. I mean, I have a huge arsenal of things that I do. I mean, from meditation to, you know, I have all kinds of cool energy healing tools that I use, biogenesis tools. I have one thing, it's called an etheric weaver. It's this very cool, it's kind of a dangly looking thing, and it's got an amethyst crystal and a copper coil and some magnets, and they use that to help balance the chakras, and it kind of looks like a pendulum, but cats really love it because it's a dangly thing, so I use it with them. I've got, you know, oils that I use. You know, I'm certified in holistic health and nutrition for animals, so I'll use a lot of, you know, homeopathy, things like that. I mean, it's different for people than it is for animals. But, yeah, the oils, I use Young Living oils, and I'm a distributor for them, and they're really my favorite because they're one of the only ones I would actually use with animals because they're very pure. They don't have any perfumes, and they don't have anything in them that could really harm them. A lot of them are certified safe to actually ingest, which is very different than a lot of other essential oils. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of tools that I use.
It looks like we might have another caller. Would you want to take another call?
Okay.
One moment.
Sure, of course. Why not?
Hello, can I have your name, please?
Hi, my name's Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Hello.
You have a question for Janet? Go ahead and ask.
I do. I'd like to know if she has any messages from a cow named Bessie that I've been hoping to rehabilitate at work, my job, taking care of her. I think she'll be back on her feet, and any messages she might want me to know.
Say what the name of, you said it's a dog, and the name was what?
No, it's a cow, C-O-W.
Oh, a cow.
Cow.
Sorry, I had to move out of the room because my dog decided to start barking right when you asked your question. I apologize.
It's okay.
It's a cow, and say again?
I apologize, I'm losing my voice. It's Bessie. Her name is Bessie.
Of course it is. Okay. And what was happening with Bessie? You said she had an injury. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear most of it.
I've been helping to rehabilitate her at work. She's been down. The previous owner, I guess, just sold the farm, and the new owner just acquired it, and I went to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the cow had been down, almost died. She was a very weak and sick and anemic. Her red blood cell count was down.
Yeah, she had some kind of infection, she just said.
So she's been down for a while.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those moments, too, where, I mean, cows are not my specialty. No animal really is my specialty, so when I pick up images or things from them, a lot of times I don't know what it necessarily means, which what I was seeing was, first she said the word infection, and then I sort of felt my whole body like I have the flu almost, like I feel really weak, and like I don't want to get up, that was the feeling that she was giving me, like I can't stand up. Was she literally unable to get up?
She's been unable to get up on her own for over a month now. And we've been picking her up with a sling, had a special sling ordered for her and to get her back up where she can start supporting her weight a little at a time, but picking her up with it.
Mm-hmm. Are they giving her antibiotics? Because whatever they're doing, it seems to be starting to work, but it just feels like things are working really slowly.
Yeah, she is on antibiotics. I didn't know if she had just been down for so long that she had lost use of her muscles.
Yeah, I am kind of feeling like there's definitely an atrophy going on there. So the sling part, I think, is actually going to help. The more you kind of help get her up and down, that will start to improve. It's interesting that she was just asking about the essential oils, because one of the things that you do with the Young Living oils, if you can find someone in your area that has them, you can do what's called raindrop therapy, and it's taking the oils and you put them down the spine of the person or the animal. And for a cow, you know, they obviously have a really thick hide, so you can use all the really good antibacterial oils and they won't have any kind of reaction to it in terms of it, you know, maybe bothering their skin a little bit. So you could do that and use oregano and valor. There's a whole, if you want to send me an email after we're done talking, I can send you the protocol for it. But I think that would help quite a bit because they're all very antiviral, antibacterial things that can enhance the use of the antibiotics and kind of get her up and running again. Did she have babies?
Did she have what?
Babies.
Well, it's very interesting. The previous owner kept no records on any of the cows, so he didn't know if she had a calf or not. But
mm-hmm.
there's one calf that showed up that was almost died also. And I started
mm-hmm.
taking care of the calf and up in a different area of the farm and put it
mm-hmm.
in with another
yeah.
cow. And I checked her
back
because we
together.
Didn't know she had a calf. Is that hers?
Yeah. Yeah, put those two back together. I feel like that might help start perking her up again, because she was asking about the baby. That's why I was wondering if she had one. So I think that could have been what started it out and made her anemic, too, that it could have been, you know, something with the birth.
Okay.
And it would make sense if the calf is...
Yeah, didn't have any record keeping and didn't tell us anything. And I just recently said, you know, this calf we brought up is almost died. None of the other cows seem to claim it. I wonder what happened to the mother. And then it dawned on me, oh, my God, I wonder if it belongs to this cow. This
dam. Yeah, well, that's why it dawned on you, is because she was sending that image to you saying, bring me my baby, where's my baby? So, you know, just like with people, animals can experience depression as well, and that can really slow the healing process down. So it'd be interesting to see if you get the two of them, you know, closer back together, if she starts perking up and getting well a little bit faster.
Oh, awesome. Incredible. Awesome.
Let me know what happens.
Yes.
Yeah, let me know what happens, okay? Okay.
I will. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
Very much.
You
Thank
bet.
You. Thank you. Janet, I was wondering, speaking of kind of near-death kind of things with animals, I know that that is one of the very most difficult things that any person can go through is to lose their companion animal. And I was wondering if you could offer some suggestions on how to deal with how do you end up figuring out when it is appropriate to euthanize an animal or not?
Well, it's a good question, and in fact, just today I lost two animal friends, not of my own, but you know, a dog that's been a friend of mine for years and years was euthanized today, and two close friends of mine had to euthanize their cat today, and so of course, you know, that was very upsetting for them and for me. You know, that's the hardest part, I think, of my job in general when that happens. There's no one way to really know what they want or when it's appropriate beyond just trusting your intuition about it. Most animals that I talk to who are about ready to cross over really don't have a preference in general. Some, once in a while, they have a strong preference. They say, you know, I want to go on my own. Or they'll say, you know, I really think I need assistance. I'm suffering here. But for the most part, what they do is they'll transmit energy to you in some way, like, you know, a thought in your head or some sort of, you know, gut feeling that you may have. A lot of times I'll tell clients to ask for it in a dream. I'll say, you know, just before you go to sleep, ask in a dream for your animal to come to you and tell you when it's time, or to tell you, give you some kind of sign. Sometimes people will say they won't remember their dream, but they'll wake up and they'll just know. Before they even get out of bed, they'll say, I just know today's the day that it has to happen. So, and it's interesting because what I hear from a lot of people is, you know, we euthanize them, we put them to sleep. You know, it's the humane thing to do. I don't know why we don't do that with people, especially when people ask. And, you know, a lot of times people can say, hey, it's time for me to go. I'd rather just cross over. You know, I've always found it strange that we don't extend the same courtesy to humans. But in general, I wouldn't say that there's one strong preference either way. And here's the thing. You're never going to be satisfied no matter what way it happens. If you let them cross on their own, then you're always going to say, oh, I waited too long. He suffered. He died. I should have euthanized him. If you euthanize your animal, then you're going to say, you know, oh, I was playing God. What if he would have lived? What if he would have turned around, right? So you're going to have that no matter what. There's really, you're not going to be satisfied either way, so you just have to kind of learn to, as best you can, to just trust your gut on that and let it go as much as you can.
Yeah. There are kind of telltale signs, aren't there, that an animal gives around the time that, you know, he's almost ready to make the transition. I know that.
Yeah, usually they'll say stuff like, I'm just going to stop eating, or I'll stop getting up. You know, I just won't get up anymore, and that's when you'll know.
Yeah.
Or I'll just sit there and stare at you. You know, because people know when that happens, their animal's personality totally changes, or the things that they enjoy doing, they stop doing them. You know, that's generally when most people will say, okay, you know, this is it. This is the end time. The answer for most things is, what's that?
They kind of isolate themselves, don't they, a little bit?
They can. I mean, it's different. It's different with each animal. Some of them will become very needy and will be all over you, and others will, go lay in a corner and not want anything to do with you. But the answer for most things is you just really have to learn to trust your intuition, develop your intuition, and then once you have, really trust it, because, I mean, that's how I get by in life. There's lots of things that I do that other people don't understand, that I say, well, I'm just doing this because that's what my gut's telling me to do. And sometimes I look like I'm crazy to other people and they don't understand it. And frankly, I don't care. I've kind of gotten to the point where I say I trust my intuition, I trust my guidance more than whatever's in front of me or more than what logic might dictate, because it's never let me down. When I go into my head about things and try to figure things out, you know, it's like people try to figure everything out. They think they have to have their whole life planned and know exactly how something's going to go, and you don't. You know, you never know. You just have to trust that feeling that this is what I'm supposed to do, and it's all going to just unfold the way it's supposed to. And it's
yeah,
the same thing with working
actually,
with animals.
Sometimes the most neat things that happen in life aren't necessarily planned for, too, you know.
Oh, yeah, and then when you get in your head, you know, you're rolling along and you're in the flow, you're sort of in the vortex, so to speak, and then all of a sudden you start getting in your head and second-guessing and saying, oh, what does this mean, or should I have done this, or how's this going to go? And you shut yourself down and you lose the magic. You shut yourself away from the magic of what could happen. And
right.
I'm not saying I'm perfect with it by any means. It's still something I struggle with, learning how to trust the universe and how to trust, you know, what's not yet in form. I mean, look at what I do for a living. I talk to animals, so I have to trust things that all the time that I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I don't know Bessie the cow. I don't know. I have no idea where the cow lives, right? So I have to just go, this is what I'm getting. And the more you do that in life, actually, the irony is the more that you do that in life, the easier it will be for you to communicate with animals, because then you're just starting to trust everything that you get and everything that you hear. And it's almost like an amplifier gets turned up. I mm-hmm. feel like, and I just went through another phase. I was very, very, very sick for the last like 6 months, and you can probably hear my mm-hmm. voice is still not great, but I really felt like that was an exit point for me. Like I was going through something where I was kind of choosing whether to stay or go, and I was trying to explain that to people, and I had a few people who really got it and believed me and said, I think you're right. Like they could see it and they could feel it, that was what was happening. But somehow, I don't mean choosing it on a personality level, like, you know, mm-hmm. but choosing it on a higher level. Am I going to stay and keep doing, you know, my service here on the planet, what I'm here to do? And the interesting part was I felt when that shifted, it was like all of a sudden, I kind of knew this was going to happen. All of a sudden, it's like the volume got turned up again, another notch mm-hmm. from what I was before. So it's almost like my vibration went up again. And I've had a few other times that this has happened to me where it's almost like somebody's working on you, you know, restructuring your neurological system mm-hmm. or your brain, where everything starts amplifying. And that's why when I was walking through the woods, I mean, you know, the owl said, stop, and I had to turn off my music and say, who said that? And looking around, excuse me, looking around trying to figure out who's talking to me. And I think that happens with everybody, and people more and more, I think, are starting to notice that that's happening with them. It's not exclusive to me. The energy on the yeah. on the planet is raising up, and so it's what how people interpret what's going on that's making the difference, and whether or not they're progressing forward spiritually and whether or not things are, you know, falling into place for them. So that's one of the biggest things that I teach. And when I say I teach it, it's because, you know, I live it. I've lived it too many times, really, more than I care to even think about. But it's what I do. And so a lot of times things will happen to me in order for me to then go and teach other people about it. And I have sort of requested and said, I'm feeling pretty complete with that experience. I don't need this anymore. I don't need to get sick anymore or have all these things happen to me for me to teach people things. I just, you know, I'm thinking that request is going to be honored at this point, but I was just like, enough. I don't need any more of that. Go ahead.
You do kind of have a sense that there are some spiritual guides or angels or some kind of non-human entities that are kind of helping you or guiding you, do you think? Or
oh yeah, no kind of about it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the time. I mean, I get and everybody has guides and everybody has you know, angels or whatever you want to call them. And I don't care what people's belief system is, you know, whether it's Jesus or God or the universe or however you want to put it out there. Some people, it's just, you know, their own higher self, like a higher version of them. But, yeah, absolutely. They come through a lot of times, even just when I'm talking to animals, they come through for me a lot. There are certain guides that I have that I call on for different things. You know, it was interesting. I grew up really religious. My family was very religious. My mom was the fourth oldest of, like, 15 in a Catholic family. And then we were Baptist after that. That's a whole other story. But so I grew up with all the religion and a lot of, you know, a lot of, as you can imagine, Jesus was a sort of a main guy. And by the time I got older, I was really not that interested in Jesus because it had been kind of shoved down my throat and I had no, you know, I didn't really want to deal with that aspect anymore. And it wasn't until I started really meditating all the time and started, you know, doing the work with animals full time where, like I said, things got turned up more that I started seeing more of my guides. And I'll never forget the first time I actually saw in my meditation Jesus, and I just went, what? And I remember being really irritated and thinking, I thought I really got rid of you. And he started talking to me, and he said, you know, the rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated. And then he laughed, and I thought, Jesus made a funny. And I'm thinking, am I making this up in my head, or what's going on here? Aww. And so it was interesting to me how things kind of came full circle, where things that I thought were sort of fictitious, you know, the angels and Jesus and all of that, the more I actually opened up spiritually, the more I started seeing a lot of these guides. And so now I'm kind of back full circle that I don't necessarily agree with the way that people depict a lot of these people, but I do feel them and experience a lot of the guidance and the energy there. Yeah. And, you know, that's just absolutely. Angels and Jesus are just two examples. I mean, I get all kinds of other guides, too. But
I noticed, Janet, that on your website, you quote Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes.
You know, the famous quote, the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be measured by the way its animals are treated.
I think it's true.
And what a wonderful statement to have on your website. I think that's basically says so much, and I'm sure that you, probably being so sensitive to animals and their feelings, probably are absorbing quite a bit about the whole climate change and the whole way in which, well, in particular, like factory farm animals are, you know, animals are so often thought of as not really sentient beings, but rather machines, you know, for our use and entertainment and eating and whatever, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian. People ask me this question a lot, and I've worked toward it for years. I grew up like most people, sort of, you know, in the U.S., like meat and potatoes. Didn't really think too much about it, and it wasn't until I got older that, you know, someone had asked me, well, if you had to kill your own chicken and eat it, would you? I was like, no. So, you know, I've worked more and more toward getting away from meat. You know, it's one thing that I do still struggle with personally, but I do bless all my food all the time before I eat it. I haven't quite, that's one issue for myself that I haven't quite resolved yet. I haven't quite figured out how to get around, you know, these are the things that I not only want to eat, but that I actually feel better eating versus the moral, you know, and the energy thought in my head of, you know, who am I, not just what am I eating, who am I eating, who was this guy, you know, so.
Well, you certainly don't get a huge amount of social support to be a vegetarian because our society is so, you know, focused on hamburgers and hot dogs, you know, and It's hard to
Well, not
find,
only that, I'm just kind of, to be honest, I'm kind of a crappy cook, too. So, I, you know, there's only so many things I know how to do to vegetables, so I'm working on that, too. I shouldn't say I'm a crappy cook. I'm just not as experienced. My mother wasn't really a cook, and, you know, so, and like I said, we ate, you know, takeout, we ate McDonald's, we ate pizza. I mean, that's kind of all the stuff that we ate. Like you said, hamburgers, fries, So when I got older and people would present vegetables to me, there were vegetables I'd say, I don't even know what that is. I've never had that before. So it's kind of funny.
As time goes on, I think more and more people will be kind of evolving towards more vegetarian lifestyles. Especially
I really hope so. Well, it's more sustainable for the planet. Getting into all the politics of what it takes to feed, you know, cows and, the factory farms, as you mentioned, there's a lot of larger sort of worldwide issues that, you know, I do know some other animal communicators who do take up some of those kind of causes. And for me, at least for right now, a lot of what I've been doing is, the one-on-one interpersonal stuff with, people like the callers having questions with their animals and trying to sort of improve things one person at a time in that way. Going back to what I said before about things sort of just recently getting turned up for me again, I've been feeling as I've been walking outside more and more like something else is shifting for me, that I'm hearing more of like more wild animals and different messages more about the evolution that's happening on the planet. So I'm kind of interested to see where this is going to go for me, because things are starting to change and I can't quite put my finger on what it is yet. I don't know if it's totally in form yet, but again, going back to the intuition part of it and just going with it, I just have to say, okay, well, this is what's happening. And trees talk to me too. So it's not, it's not just animals. I'll see a tree that fell down and I'll literally feel pain about it. And, how do you explain to people that, I'm sad about this tree. I feel like crying because I'm looking at this tree lying there. You know, it's not the way most people
such as think. A sacred function, a sacred function of giving us basically the air we breathe and taking so much pollution off, out of our soils. And, the trees are just doing amazing things for us.
And for the planet and for themselves. There's other things that they're doing besides, just the things that they do for us as well. So I guess stay tuned about whatever they start talking to me about. I have no idea what it's going
to
be. Me too. I have no idea. It should be interesting. And I'm interested to find out if the different species of trees have different attitudes, kind of like animals do as well. That's kind of my suspicion at this point. But we'll wait and see. I'll reserve judgment on the attitudes of trees until I find out exactly what they have to say.
Well, believe it or not, we are running just about to the end of our program, and I was wondering if, one final question, is there anything that you would like to just say to people who have their companion animals with them, who they love very much? Is there anything that you might want to say to them that might be helpful for them to have more positive and loving relationships and joyful relationships with their companion animals?
Okay, I'll try to get through this really fast. Really fast, Dogs, run with them. Take them outside, walk them. You having a backyard and letting them mill around in the yard or chasing each other around in the yard is not exercise. When your doctor says to you, you need 30 minutes of cardio 3-4 times a week, there's a reason for that. You have to have sustained amount of exercise for your heart rate to go up, your cortisol to go down. It's the same thing for dogs. And I'm telling you, probably about 80% of the problems I see with dogs is because people are lazy and they don't exercise their pets. They don't go out and hike with them. They don't, socialize them. They just leave them in the backyard to run around. However, this winter was brutal, so I'm giving most of my clients a pass on this one because it was not fun. I'm telling you right now, it was not fun walking my dog this winter. The other thing, too, in general, I would say is just about the cat species in general. They're extremely sensitive, and they're a little bit vain. Don't say negative things about them to them or in front of other people, because they will piss on your bed. They will give an attitude, as we saw David. And then the other thing I would say is animals respond in this order: your energy and then your thoughts, and then anything you say. So, you know, are you calm? Are you relaxed? Like, what energy are you giving off? I always want to laugh when people say dogs can sense fear. Well, yeah, and pain and love and, you know, and everything, every emotion they can sense. And so how you feel about something is what they take on. They trust your energy. And there's literally cords of energy that go between you and your pets and cords of energy that go between you and, you know, people you love or people that you're close to, that, you know, they can feel something and you can feel it. Doesn't matter whether they're in front of you or they're, you know, 500 miles away. And it's the same thing with animals. They pick up on all your stuff energetically. And then they speak in pictures with each other. So it's almost like a game of mental ping pong where they're sending images back and forth to each other. So anything you're thinking about an animal, you're actually thinking it at them. So you want to align your energy with what you're thinking and just kind of think what you want, not what you don't want, about your animal, like to change a behavior or to convey a message to them. It's really that easy. Most of the time we just use words and we go, blah, 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 dog. And then people go, oh, the dog's dumb. He's not listening. Well, he's not dumb. He just, what you're saying and your energy aren't aligned. And
right.
So they're going to trust your energy more than what you say. So that's kind of the biggest thing I tell people is to just, you know, readjust yourself when you want to get your animals to behave differently. And I, of course, have to remind myself of that, too, because when my animals are doing something I don't like, I go, oh, great, what am I doing wrong now, right? So I have to go back to myself and go, okay, what's happening with me? How can I shift myself so that they stop doing whatever thing it is that's annoying me or upsetting me? So it's a constant looking within.
Yes. I'm so sorry that we have to conclude at this point, but I wanted to say thank you so much for all of your wonderful insight and wonderful energy. Thank you so much, and perhaps you will be coming back with us if we invite you back, and we'd love to have you back again sometime. Well,
yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so much.
And take some more calls maybe next time, because people love to find out what their animals are saying.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again. And till next time.
Thank you so much, Beth.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Bye.
You too.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet.
You have been listening to Your Turn to Speak with host Beth Miller. Each week, Beth features guests whose important views are often overlooked in the mainstream dialogue. You can listen to this show again at freespiritbroadcasting.com. And be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for another live, inspiring conversation on Your Turn to Speak.